A philodendron on my desk spreads its leaves everywhere. Before Daniel left, this place was different. There was no space. When he left, I made one thing, space. I dislike clutter, possessions, things. When he left and took all his things and was gone, suddenly there was space. My living room is space. It's a big room, and my bed, couch, and the small low table we eat at are all that are in it. A green rug, green is quiet, an Indian bedspread on the wall. Then up a step and you're in my study, which used to be the dinette, but I've made it my workroom, and here it's warm and a little crowded, but that's all right. My funny black and red desk, my plants, a rocker, another chair, a rug, bookshelves and piled books, a busy, bright Indian bedspread curtain divides this workroom from the kitchen. I write here poems, stories, books, and I type to make my living. I think of it as manual labor. It is as right as planting the earth or baking bread. I swear to you, I swear on my common woman's head, the common woman is as common as a common loaf of bread, and will rise. There used to be clutter. I am trying to tell you how it's different now. When I was married, there was always clutter in my head. When I wanted to write, he'd be here making noise, wanting me, my attention, another child to deal with. There was the physical clutter he made, and also the clutter of him in my mind, his demands and expectations, and the ocean of unsaid things. But things unsaid remain. They stayed in my head and didn't leave me alone. Free to say whatever I please, whatever I want to or have to now, my mind has the space my living room has. When I step in the living room, my mind and the room greet each other as sisters. While Jean was away, we wrote letters frequently. We visited back and forth. And instead of our friendship suffering because of the distance, it became even closer, and we missed each other very much. Daniel began to balk and be upset at my letters to Jean, and sometimes hers to me, saying in disgust, "These almost sound like love letters." I'd answer that was ridiculous. I thought it was. But at last our feelings began to seem, even to blind, deaf, dumb me, to be physically loving as well as loving in every other way. And maybe I let myself remember how I'd felt 4 years ago when she'd stayed with us. Finally, just when she and the man she lived with were about to return to New York to live, I found myself maneuvering and arranging and seducing, writing letters and talking like mad, and ultimately convincing everybody that we should all make love together, still not ready to know that all I wanted was to be with Jean. The other three, all in their different ways, resisted, but I finally won them over, and there we were, to your right and down the one step to the living room, there we quite finally were, four of us making love. Every one of us self-conscious. And then Jean leaned over and kissed me. I'm a writer. Naturally, I put it in a story. When she made love with Jean, everything she knew about her own feelings changed. She felt so much stronger things than she'd ever experienced with Daniel or anyone else. Her cheeks began to burn the moment Jean touched her, lightly, with her small hands, looking into her eyes with such loving, seeing her, bringing her mouth close and starting to kiss. It was so different, it made her weep. After years of constriction, her feelings restrained by weights, 100,000-pound weights imprisoning them always, so they only came out now and then, in no more than little spurts. Their sudden soaring made her weep. But then everything went wrong. The relationship with Jean didn't work. I had no understanding then of why, but now I'm sure it was because she certainly is bisexual, but she isn't a lesbian, and so she didn't experience the immense awakening I did. Instead, its immensity frightened her. And Jean didn't want me, so I gathered that great hurt and despair around me from my blanket and went back deep, deep into my closet. When I could think at all, I thought I was bisexual too and just a very unhappy person. And by then I certainly knew I didn't want to be with Daniel, but I didn't know what to do about it, and I didn't think I had the right to do anything. Spring came and found me sitting on my black couch up front in my apartment, near the windows, unable to move, for 2 months. I moved to go to the bathroom. I wanted tea very badly, but could hardly ever move to make myself cups of tea. I moved to feed the children and get them to school and let them in the door when they came home and feed them and get them to bed. The rest of the time, I sat on the black couch and stared in front of me. I didn't talk, read, or write. It was too much effort. I just wanted to sit and stare, and that's all I did. Finally, I began to feel a little better, making my last effort to adjust to the life I was in and didn't think I could get out of. When early summer arrived, I was on my feet again. I wasn't there because I wasn't a free woman yet, but Laura told me how at a women's march in 1972, some woman gave a speech about being a feminist, and this is what she said, approximately. I would like to thank my husband for his help in freeing me. If he wasn't such a male chauvinist pig, I wouldn't be here today. And in addition to my husband, I would like to thank Marlon Brando and the director Bertolucci for their help in freeing me. The end catharsis began with a night of hysterical crying following an evening of Brando in Last Tango in Paris, brutalizing a woman through 2 hours of pig glorification. He ended up sodomizing her against her will, having first forced her to get a stick of butter from the refrigerator with which he lubricated her. She got the butter sullenly, started to scream and cry when she understood what he was going to do, but she wound up whimpering sensually. Throughout the scene, he kept saying he'd show her, and if she'd shut up, she'd like it. I felt her degradation as mine, as all women's. I remember his face, triumphant and malicious above her, and her face, crying and helpless, but by the end, liking it, loving it, because that's what Bertolucci had her do, come to like it, while Brando humiliated her and asserted his dominance over her. And I think she'd begun by saying she wanted to stop seeing him. He sure showed her. As in the Joni Mitchell folk song I heard a woman singing the other day, "Oh, you're a mean old daddy, but I like you fine." I wanted to get up and leave very badly, but I couldn't because I was too upset to move, and because getting up meant more than just leaving the movie. I didn't, and finally, it was over. Through most of it, I was in anguish, which grew greater and greater, and really her shooting him in the end relieved very little for me. What she and I had endured was too great for his death to begin to make up for. Nothing could make up for it. When we left, Daniel asked me what was wrong, and I couldn't tell him. We'd been together 13 years, and he had no idea of the immense despair and rage that film roused in me. He insisted I speak to him, but I couldn't. I knew he wasn't there to hear me. He didn't know me. At home, finally, my crying began. Shortly after that, on August 26, 1973, lifting a heavy breakfast tray off my low table, I sprained my back. It got better and worse and better again, but in mid-September, I found myself in bed and told to stay there and move as little as possible for 2 weeks. I lay in bed with a manuscript, the book I was currently working on, balanced on my belly and propped against pillows so I could write in it. I was supposed to stay flat and still, so I couldn't even raise my knees to rest the book against them. But somehow I managed, and for 8 days worked on the book. Around the ninth, I slowed down, then bogged down, then just lay there and began to allow myself to think and think and think. And slowly the realization came to me, I mean approaching me slowly, as though I could see it coming from afar, moving and moving toward me, slowly and unceasingly until it hit very hard. I had to get out, and I wanted to be with women. It hadn't worked with Jean, so somehow I'd have to find my way into the community of women and see if there were others I could love. In other words, if I wanted to be a lesbian? And when I finally did understand that I was, when at last that information really reached me, the strongest emotion I felt was surprise. On the 10th through the 13th day of my confinement, I did 2 things. Stopped speaking to Daniel and wrote a story. Well, I still spoke to him a little, but less as the days went on and the story grew, and only about the most necessary things. And meanwhile, I wrote. I began with line 1 and just kept going. I named it Breaking. It was the story of me telling Daniel it was over. It was a shock to him, in the story, as in reality. It had been clear on a nonverbal level for a long time, but not a word of it had been verbalized before. Now I was saying it. I went through it all, the initial scene, my fear, his shock, the following days, the fighting and hassling, his moving out. When I finished, I read it, and I saw what I'd said, and that's how I broke my pattern. The pit of my stomach disintegrated. My eyes ceased meeting his, and after a day of that, the last, 14th day of my confinement, he said this not talking to him was very bad. It was getting him very upset. I had to tell him what was wrong, and I did. Shall I describe how he reacted, what followed? Why? It's not necessary. It was very painful. It's over. One thing, though, I understand now that really for at least 2, and possibly as many as 6 years, I had wanted to leave him, but was so sure I didn't have the right to, because he wouldn't recover from it. I hadn't even been able to think it. But it wasn't true. He survived. Not only survived, he's probably happier now, not with me. For months I kept waiting for the other shoe to drop, for him to freak out, kill himself, or kill me, and he didn't. But he hadn't been able to end it any more than I had. We stayed together 13 years. If we'd been honest or strong or something we weren't, it might have been 6 or 7. Or if really strong, maybe none at all. But I wish to speak only for myself. It took me so long. It didn't have to. He survived, I survived, and this is what I realized. I put the box around myself. To some degree, at least, it was me who put me in a box. Now I wonder how much of that I did throughout my life and try to guard that I never do it again.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down. And let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She knows everything you do, because the woman in your life is you. The woman in your life knows simply what is true. She knows a simple way to touch, to make you whole now. The woman in your life, she can touch so easily. She knows everything you do, because the woman in your life is you. And who knows more about your story, about your struggles in the world? Weary shoulders than the woman in your life, as she's trying to come through. A woman's voice with messages, a woman's feelings. Oh, the woman in your life, she can feel so easily. She knows everything you do, because the woman in your life is you. And who is sure to give you courage, and who will surely make you strong, and who will bear all the joy that is coming to you, if not the woman in your life? She's someone to pursue. She's patient and she's waiting, and she'll take you home now. The woman in your life, she can wait so easily. She knows everything you do, because the woman in your life is you. Because the woman in your life, the woman in your life, the woman in your life is you.
The singer you just heard was Alex Dobkin. The story I read was Woman Becoming by Irene Yarrow. The lines from the Common Woman poem are by Judy Gran, and the song lines were by Joni Mitchell from her album Blue. I'll be taking some phone calls in a few minutes. All calls on Every Woman's Space are for women only. The number is 371-5200. I'll repeat that, 371-5200. When you get on the air, please turn down your radio. I want to say just a few words before we take phone calls. I wrote that article or story or whatever it could be called about 2.5 years ago. There are many ways that I feel differently now because I've been living now in this world for 3 years, but they're all okay. I'm somewhat more realistic. I've always tended to be very idealistic and still am pretty much. In any way, it's very hard for me not to be idealistic about women. But living for the last 3 years, both out in the world, because I'm so much more conscious now than I used to be, and as a part of the women's community, I have changed somewhat, and my vision has changed. I think I'm less of a child now, because I've had some space to grow up in, and I've become less glowingly optimistic about just being a lesbian and being a feminist, solving all of the problems of life immediately. Most of them still exist. The problems of survival, economic and psychological, the problems of relationships and loneliness, and all the political and social problems of here and now. But I meet them from a much more solid base now, because I do believe in myself and in the power of women together to heal ourselves and each other, to fight and change and grow, and to love. That was my little addendum. The telephone number is 371-5200, and I believe we do have a telephone call. BAI, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hi, I'm sorry, we don't take calls from men on the air, so we're going to go on to the next call. Do we have one? WBAI, you're on the air. Hi, good. Oh, can you turn down your radio, please? I think we better go on to the next call. No, okay, there are no phone calls coming right now, except those two, which were kind of duds. The phone number is 371-5200. And if there are any women who want to call up and share their feelings, that would be great. Until they do, I'd enjoy very much to tell you the history of that piece. I was a writer for a long time, and I knew an editor of a very large commercial publication, a commercial literary publication, but it reached a whole lot of people. And he knew that I had become a lesbian, and he, through my agent, contacted me and asked me to write an article on what it was like to change lifestyles from being a straight married lady and to being a lesbian feminist. And I said, sure, and I would love to, and I was very happy of the opportunity. And I wrote for 3 months. I worked really hard on this piece. And then I submitted it to him, and he rejected it on the grounds that there wasn't enough feeling in it. Which is really funny. I'll continue with the history of that piece after we take the next call. WBAI, you're on the air.
Yes.
I'm really sorry, but we don't take calls from men on Every Woman's Space. Is there another call? BAI, you're on the air. Hello? Hello?
Is this WBAI?
Yes, you're on the air. Hello.
I was listening to your program tonight, and I have a sort of, I don't know how to really confront my feelings. I felt for many years, you know, that I was a lesbian. I've been in therapy, and they refuse to discuss my feelings. It's always like pushed under the rug.
Huh.
I don't know where to go, or I don't know what to say.
Well, I could make some suggestions to you.
Yeah.
I don't know what kind of therapy you're in, but there are a lot of kinds of therapy that are supportive to women and whatever lifestyles they're deciding to live.
Yeah.
And I just will make a couple suggestions right now. The easiest and the best for me to think of is, if you're living in Manhattan, is Identity House.
Yeah.
And they are located on 6th Avenue near 15th Street, and their telephone number is 243-8181. Now, what they are is a peer counseling service, and they have a walk-in clinic from on Saturdays, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday from 6 to 10, You can go there and walk in without any appointment and talk to a woman who's a lesbian and who's trained as a peer counselor, not as a therapist, but someone that you can talk to about your feelings.
Oh, thank you very much.
And wait, don't go away. There's also an excellent peer counseling program at Brooklyn College. And the number of the Women's Center there is 780-5777. Now, what they would set up for you is a more long-range thing where you could call them up and say what kind of a woman you'd like to talk to. Like, you could date someone around your own age or a lot older if that felt more comfortable, whatever was comfortable. If you wanted to talk to a lesbian, or say if you wanted to talk to a woman who was not a lesbian but who was a feminist and who supported lesbianism, you could just request whatever kind of a counselor you'd like to talk to, and then go in and have a series of talks with her. But just in general, any kind of therapy that doesn't support you and whatever your desire is to do with whatever you want to with your life is probably not a good therapy for you.
Yeah, I know. I spent 6 years, and it was something that was always there, but they just refused to go into the story that you read tonight, and I just identified with it so strongly.
Oh, fantastic.
I'm afraid, really, to confront the truth.
Well, I was too, as you can hear. And it took, I feel very badly about those 6 or 7 years that it took me to confront too. And I hope that you'll follow up and call them at Identity House or Brooklyn College. And you'll probably get a lot of encouragement to be able to confront and face whoever you are.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for calling. WBAI, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'm 16 years old, and I just wanted to tell you that I thought the program was very interesting.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks very, very much. Okay. Right now, there are no other calls coming in, and the number is 371-5200. I want to say that the peer counseling program I just mentioned is a part of Brooklyn College Women's Center, not a part of Brooklyn College. That was a mistake, but the phone number was correct. Okay, so what happened was, okay, there's another phone call coming in. Hold on, whoever you are. Let me just tell another piece of my publication story. So this guy rejected this piece that I wrote and said it didn't have enough feeling in it, which that was one rejection I could live with because I knew that wasn't true. And I figured that he didn't like what I was saying. And he also had to pay me because he had to give me something for having commissioned this piece and not using it. But unfortunately, he called it a kill fee, and that was a heavy thing. So I got this check in the mail that said, kill fee for a woman becoming. But I figure I've paid him back because it's been published since then in the Amazon Quarterly, which was a magazine, and then in the Lesbian Reader, which is a book anthology of pieces of writing by many, many lesbians, and it's the second piece in the book, and it makes me very happy every time I open the book cover and see it there. And that book is available right now in New York City, and you can get it. I'll tell you about where later. Okay. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hello, is this Irene?
Yes, hi.
Hi, Irene. Can I make an announcement for a women's poetry reading?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. Next weekend, a poetry reading for Labyrinth Books will be held at the Women's Center. Among the 18 poets scheduled to appear will be Adrienne Rich, Susan Sherman, Jan Clausen. Mm. Call in for Labyrinth Books, 741-3460, for further information. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. It really sounds exciting. I'm going to try and get there. I hope everybody got the information because I didn't jot it down, so I can't repeat it. Are you still on the line?
Let me repeat the phone number.
Right.
The number is 741-3460, and that's Labyrinth Books.
And when is the date and the time that it's going to be again?
Well, the women will be able to get that information when they call.
Okay, fantastic.
Okay, thank you for your support.
Everybody should go. Are there any other calls? Okay. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hi, I wanted to tell you it was a really beautiful, emotional program tonight.
Oh, thank you so much.
But in the beginning of the show, you read a poem with an analogy about lesbian playing the recorder.
That was the beginning of the article.
Well, that was the beginning.
Yep, it starts out that way in a kind of imagist kind of a way, and then it goes on into a more realistic description.
I really liked that part.
Thank you.
I was wondering if you could tell me, and then afterwards you played something by Alex Babkin.
Right.
Do you know if there are any like feminist songbooks?
There are, but I don't. Okay, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll get the name and where you can get it, and I'll mention it on the show next week.
Very good. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very, very much for calling. Okay, BAI, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that I think the program was really beautiful. I'm really related to it.
Thank you very much.
I was wondering if I'm moving away to Burlington, Vermont, where there are a lot of lesbian women and feminism.
Uh-huh.
And I'm wondering if you could send me a reading list of books I could read by and about women,
uh-huh.
about lesbians, and also about women and men, because right now I'm having kind of a dilemma because I love a man and a woman both.
Wow. Okay, I'll try to get hold of one and send it to you.
Okay,
so I also suggest before you leave, if you if you're in New York City, to stop by at either of the two really wonderful women's bookstores that we have. One is called Labrys Books, and they're the ones that the benefit poetry reading is being held for next week. And they're at 33 Barrow Street in New York. And then Woman Books is another women's bookstore, and it's at 201 West 92nd. And you could, if you went in and talked to them, you could probably get them to give you a really good reading list.
Okay, so I give you my name and address now, so you can send me...
No, write to me here at the station and give me your name and address, and again, repeat what you want me to get for you, okay? Because we're not supposed to do that over the air.
Oh, okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for calling. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
I really like your program, and I'd like to ask you one question.
Okay.
About marriage.
Okay, go ahead.
What do you think of it?
What do I think of marriage?
Yes.
I think it's probably an institution that's going through some of the worst troubles it's ever been in in the history of the world. I think that it has built into it a situation of oppression, because that's the way society has set it up. I'd like to think that it's possible for there to be equal marriages where men and women relate with each other lovingly and treating each other with great consideration and respect as human beings. And if that were possible, that would mean there wouldn't be any sexism within that relationship, and it would have every bit as much of a chance of being a fine relationship as a relationship between women has the chance of being. I think the main problem is that sexism is so incredibly pervasive that the men who mostly consider themselves feminist and non-sexist are those who realize how deeply sexist they are and how difficult it is to get it out of their systems. I have played a song by Holly Near on a show a while ago where she sings all about wishing that men and women could get it together, and in the end she has this plea where she says, change one-sided marriage. And it's really beautiful on the song, and I do not feel, as some of my sisters feel, that every woman can be a lesbian. And I think that a lot of women are going to stay straight, and I wish that marriages could be really great, and I wish that relationships between men and women could be great. And I think the best chance of that happening is for men to work as hard as they possibly can to gain a consciousness of their own sexism and the way that they oppress women, and then there might be a possibility of there being good relationships between men and women. I went on a long time. Did I answer your question?
You see, the thing is that I'm thinking of getting married sometime soon.
Uh-huh.
I'm hoping that everything will work out all right. But I'm afraid, because I feel that there's so much pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Because today you have to prove yourself and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that he wants me to show him that I'm capable of keeping up with them, you know? And
mm-hmm.
it's almost like competing.
Mm-hmm. Maybe I guess the best thing that I could suggest is that you give it a great deal of thought before you do it, and talk as much as possible, not only with him but with other women about what your hopes and ideas and expectations are of the relationship. Okay?
I understand.
Yeah. I'm going to have to go hang up now, because it seems to be 11 o'clock, unfortunately. Thank you very, very much for calling. Bye-bye. If there are other people calling, I can stay around for a few minutes after the show and take a few phone calls. I had a whole lot of announcements, and I don't have time to make very many of them, but I wanted to make a couple really, really quickly. It was quite an experience for me reading that piece on the air, and I hope that it meant something to people who heard it. It seems like it did. On November 19th on WBAI, there's going to be an entire day of women's programming, which I and Judy Pasternak are working very hard on. It's called Women's Spirituality Day, and it's going to be a part of WBAI's mini-thon. And I want you to circle that day on your calendar, November 19th, and do not do anything else on that day. Did I say Women's Spirituality? It's Women's Survival Day. I'm very tired. Women's Spirituality will be the subject of next week's show. please tune in and listen. And thank you very much for being here. And now we will close with our theme song, which is Holly Near singing Sister, Woman, Sister.
Sister, woman, sister, can you still feel any pain? Or have they robbed you of your anger while putting Thorazina in your vein? Sister, woman, sister, have the walls grown up so high that you can't even dream of leaving and you've forgotten how to fly? Oh, sister, woman, sister, did they take away your child and they locked her up in some juvenile hall to grow up weary and wild? Oh, sister, woman, sister, they won't let me come and see you no more, but I still got the poem that you wrote me. It's hanging on my apartment door. It reads a knock, but the door won't open. I seek, but I can't find you. I ask, but you can't hear me.